This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hour two as we get rocking and rolling on a Tuesday. Glad you've been with us on Wake Up Call. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Another report in the NFL of another player being investigated for gambling. Isaiah Rogers, who's a corner for the Indianapolis Colts. He's also a kick returner. Possible violations of the league's gambling policy. And Rogers addressed the situation Monday night in a tweet, says he takes full responsibility for his actions. He wrote, "I know I've made mistakes, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to repair the situation. The last thing I ever wanted to do is be a distraction of the Colts organization, my coaches, and my teammates." Now, this is where it gets interesting. This was a sportsbook account that was put in the name of a friend of Rogers, an associate of Rogers, and 100 bets were placed on the account over an undisclosed amount of time, including games that were played by the Colts. Most of the bets were in the $25 to $50 range. There was at least one low four-figure bet. So Rogers is yet another one of these players that's a little confused because the league sort of has embraced their partnership with gambling sites and sports books, but the league explicitly prohibits anybody in the league from betting on NFL games. And it's sort of this two-sided thing, right? So they're promoting it. They want to have the partnerships. The partnerships are working. And yet at the same time, they're telling their players, you can't participate in any of this. So what's likely to happen here? Well, if they find out that he did in fact bet on the Colts, he could get a Calvin Ridley level suspension, which is a full year, right? Now, that's probably where that's going. But they take this stuff really seriously. And one of the main reasons they do is because if you're a league, and this is true with all of these leagues, you can survive a lot of scandals. You can survive players who have drug problems. You can survive players who get in trouble with the law. You can have all sorts of scandals within the team that where the law enforcement comes in and has to do some due diligence, has to arrest people or whatnot. You can survive it because players sometimes go rogue and do things that break the law. They're like a lot of citizens around the country that do that. But what you can't do is you can't overcome integrity. If your integrity is lost by the public, then it's very difficult to get it back. So the partnership works for the NFL from a sponsorship standpoint. It does sound a little hypocritical here, but they are saying, look, I think they can have their cake and eat it too. They can have a partnership with a sports book. They can have the sponsorship that comes from that, but they can also tell their players, but this is something we can't have you go near because the integrity of our league depends on you guys not gambling. Meaning, and also too, it protects their partnerships, right? Because if you are in a meeting, if you are a player in a meeting and you know something about the other team, you know something that you can exploit from the other team, and somehow somebody's monitoring certain level of bets that you're making, or they know that you have a friend who's making bets for you, it can affect all sorts of things in that business. You have you have inside information.
So could you, because I'm getting tired of this. It's so hypocritical by the NFL, and I expect nothing less from them. But
well, let me ask you a question before you say that. You say it's hypocritical, and that's fine. Would you allow players to gamble as much money as they want all the time, no matter what, on their own team?
If it's for them winning,
doesn't matter.
No, I know, but I mean, yeah, I guess that's the only thing, because if you're betting on your team to lose, like your own team to lose, and if you're a starting cornerback or a reserve linebacker and you're betting on your team to lose, then that's where you can, there's right. influence.
Right.
If you're betting on your team to win, I don't see a problem for it.
Well,
I would take it this step and just say, hey, you know what? You guys can gamble. Just don't bet on your team. And okay. I know that what, the argument would be is like, well, hey, so-and-so may have a friend who's over there, and, because there's their influence. I mean, that I think that might happen anyways.
Would you follow people who are in the league if they were openly betting? Let's say you have, I'll just use a name. Let's say Breece Hall, right? and he is a, let's say he's like, you know what, the league allows me to gamble. I'm going to gamble, and I'm going to post, I'm going to go on Twitter and tell you who I'm, what I'm betting and what my thoughts are. I'm going to give you my thoughts on the game. He is in the league. He has friends in the league. He knows the rumors. He knows what's going on behind the scenes. Would you follow him and trust him if he said, I'm betting on the Cowboys this weekend against the Commanders, a game I'm not playing, but he's sometimes, you know, but you know he knows players on both of those teams.
See, I think I would, because I wouldn't be looking at it as him being a bookie type of person, you know, right, where the influence is coming from. For whatever reason, Vegas already knows. I mean, you and I have said it time and time again when we look at it, like, oh, Vegas set the line here, and we come back Monday morning, we're like, I don't know how they do it. You know, I would have thought it was this, and it wasn't even close. It was right on the money, as Vegas always says.
But one of the things Vegas does is they move the line based on how much money is coming in.
Right.
I mean, as many people know, but I'll just repeat it, the house isn't – you're not betting against that. Like, if you take the Colts, let's say you take a Colts in a game and you make a bet in a sports book. The sports book is taking your bet, so they're going to give you money, but they're hoping that they have enough money from the people who bet on the Titans in that game. So what they're trying to do is they're taking from Peter to pay Paul when Paul is you. But they're not giving you their – they don't want to give you their money, right? What they want is if they can get a world where the Colts are playing the Titans and they've got equal money bet on the Colts and the Titans, they take the vig in the middle – and then they go, well, I just take the losing bets and I pay the winning bets and then I get my 10%.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how a sports book makes its money. They make them. Obviously, you hear stories of a sports book took a bath because they couldn't get the same amount. They tried, but they couldn't.
But for every bath they take, they also take
a win.
They're showering.
Right. But they also take a win.
More times than not.
So, but again, that's not the purpose. They're not trying to beat you. Right. Because again, there's going to be people who are betting on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to pay those people. Somebody wins and somebody loses in a bet. So they are paying people.
Right.
Right. Like there isn't a situation where 100% of the bets, like you go to a blackjack table, the whole table could lose a hand. Everybody. Right. The dealer could get blackjack and everybody on the table loses. But in a game, the house isn't taking 100% of all the money. Right. When you throw craps and you throw a seven, they take all the bets off the table. Now, they could bet, obviously, the no pad, the don't pass line. But for the most part, everybody loses their bet. Right. But in a sports book, they are paying people who won the bet. Somebody said, I will take the Chiefs -5.5. And somebody goes, you know, I think that game will be close. I'm taking the Chargers with the five. And they go, fine, that's what they're trying to do. So the house isn't winning in the typical sense of a casino game. They're winning by adjusting the line so that they can take, you see it at blackjack tables all the time. Like if you and I are sitting at a blackjack table and we both bet $10 and you bust and I win. I bust and you win. They will take the $10 chips and they'll just give it to you.
Yep.
They don't even put it back and give it to you. They just go, yeah, I'm taking $10 from Tony. I'm going to give it to Ron because Ron's bet won. Yep. That's what a sports book does. So my thought is this. They're manipulating the lines for the reasons that they do to try to get equal money on both sides. But if they notice that Breece Hall, for example, is betting $50,000 on a game involving two teams in the NFL, they're going to go, what does he know that we don't? Like what does he know that we don't? Now I will give you the flip side of this. So the Arizona State scandal that happened in the 90s. It was one of, because I was living in Vegas at the time, and we had a player on our minor league basketball team, Isaac Burton, who was part of that scandal at Arizona State. And one of the things that I kind of learned, because I was kind of new to the whole thing, was how they caught those players were the casinos were noticing how much betting was occurring on average Pac-10 games going on in January on a Wednesday. They knew the industry trend. And for some reason, they started noticing every time Arizona State was playing, there was large amounts of bets, way too large. And so they notified the FBI on this because they noticed in their own industry that something wasn't right. Like college kids were coming up with $10,000 to bet on a game against Arizona State. And they were like, wait, there's something going on here. And so they were the monitors of what was transpiring. And so they caught him. It wasn't like some mob boss, like informant, some guy in a dusty room going, yeah, we got the point shaving on that Arizona State game. And then the FBI heard it on a tape while they were trying to figure out who shot Momo Giancana. It was the casinos that went, we know our industry, and this is way out of whack. This is way out of whack. And that's when they started to, you know, to put the squeeze on why this was happening. Now, I will say that is something that I think you're right. I think if you have a player that bets against his team, then it would raise a lot of questions. Well, yeah. Why? He's in the meeting every week. Does he know about an injury? Does he know about something that's going to get exploited?
Have the other guys came together right. And go, hey, guys, this game.
Right.
You know, they're doing like some little subtle thing, touching the side of their nose, like, we have to throw this one because, you know, the money we're going to get from it.
And I think that it's not the same as baseball, because one of the reasons that people were saying, well, Rose didn't bet on, you never bet on his team to lose. Yeah, but Rose was the manager of the team, and he was manipulating pitching lineups and pitching rotations to get back into games he had no business trying to get back into, to try to win when the best bet was take your loss and keep everybody fresh because you've got a series with so-and-so down the road. But I don't think you have that in the NFL. But it is... It would be interesting if you allowed all the players to bet. I wonder what they actually would share.
Dr. Rick here.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb, but we got some breaking news about in the world of golf. This is coming from Darren Rovell on Twitter with a CNBC report that says the PGA Tour has agreed to merge with Saudi-backed rival LIV Golf. I'll get to that story coming up. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb. It probably is a lot of legalese that I probably have to process.
Yeah.
But it's getting a lot of attention
that
from golf
are they
writers.
Just noticing defeat?
Yeah, well, that's very true. But a lot of the some of the golf writers we like are commenting on Twitter about it. Jason Sobel says, we're all just living in a simulation, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of a fun. Well, let's get to the good, the bad, and the dumb. Let's go with the good of the day.
Well, I mean, that kind of trumps the good, the bad, and the dumb, because that story could be good, bad, and dumb all in one.
Right.
But the good of the day that originally, before 5 minutes ago, the Chiefs visited the White House yesterday.
Yes, they did.
And, you know, you think to yourself, what could go wrong?
Yeah.
When you have some polarizing figures in sports and media, if you will. Well, Travis Kelce saw an opportunity, decided to take it, and took to the podium with the presidential seal and wanted to get something off his chest.
So you're not allowed to, you're not allowed to do that at all?
Like, I don't know if you're not allowed to do that. We've seen athletes
without the president's permission.
When he says,
come up to the podium,
say something.
Joe Michael, you're great. Come on up and say hi. And that's something you're allowed to do. But it was left vacant.
It was
and he just
vacant.
Walked over to it.
I mean, here's the scenario. Off to the side, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce were standing with President Biden, presenting him with a 46 Chiefs jersey and doing a photo op. And once the photo op was done, Travis shakes a hand and he looks to his left and goes, you know what? There's an open mic. I'm going to go say hi, basically.
Yeah.
But the reason why it's good is not only because you have a character like Travis Kelce who does not care and will do anything he wants, which is always fun. Patrick Mahomes proving why he is the $500 million man in the NFL. Goes over and rescues his team and teammate.
What would have happened if he left him alone?
I don't know. I mean,
like, would he have been arrested?
He got the only thing he got off saying was, you know, he's like, you know, I just came here to say, and then Patrick Mahomes interrupted him and goes, sorry. And then as soon as Mahomes moves him out of the way, there was a guy at the ready dismantling the podium. So we'll never know.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll never know.
And I always want to blame the guy who left the mic hot.
I want to know, how did Patrick Mahomes know that? And this is not to insult his intelligence. He's a smart guy. But how did he know you're not allowed to do that?
Yeah.
Like I got to be honest with you. I wouldn't have done anything. Like, if Travis Kelce walked up to the podium, I would have thought, it's all fun and games. We're having a good time with the president. We're the Super Bowl champs. I wouldn't have gone and got him. I would have been like, yeah, let's let Travis Kelce do what he wants. I don't know. We're having a good time here. But Mahomes was at least smart enough to go, there's some protocol we're breaching, and let's not breach it, and got Travis Kelce ahead of time. So that's pretty smart on his part. But I want to know, how did they tell him beforehand? Hey, just letting you guys know, don't go near the podium before we do anything. And Travis, and so they all knew, and then Travis Kelce broke it anyway?
See, I want to think it's that. I want to think, you know, they were all brief ahead of time saying, hey, you're not allowed to go to the podium.
Yeah.
You know, so just keep it there. And Travis was like, man, that's a hot mic.
That's what they say, that when you go see, like, before she passed away, I'm assuming it's the king now, but when you used to go meet the queen, they used to say, well, you have to say this, you have to say that, you have to, you know, there's a protocol. And some people are like, screw the protocol, I'm not from this country. And some people go, all right, I'll honor it. It's whatever. But I wonder if you go to the White House, they say, all right, we're going to the White House, but here's the things you guys can't do. So do they get to have lunch with the president, or is it just a photo op? They get to do anything?
No,
cool?
I think they get a tour. I think that's lunch. Remember, the only reason why I remember is because when Trump was president, he served
fast food.
Yeah, to the college kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was all McDonald's. Well, no, there's other stuff too, right?
There's other stuff. It was a bunch of fast food.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think they have lunch. And then I'm assuming there's a tour of the White House as much as they're allowed to tour.
If I'm going to fly out there, I want to meet the president, but I also want to do some stuff. I don't want to be, like, coming out for a 10-minute thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Nah, that's pretty cool. There's a tour. They just can't. There's probably certain rooms you're not allowed to see.
Right, probably. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is this, Tony, that college baseball regionals are happening right now. But some without some controversy. Yesterday, during a regional matchup, Penn State was called for a pitch clock violation during the fourth inning.
It trickles down all the way to college baseball, this pitch
clock
thing?
Now their pitch clock violation is 10 seconds. And where the controversy comes is that at the moment, it was in the fourth inning, bases were loaded, two outs, two strike, or a 3-2 count. It looked like the batter was set. And I don't know if he wasn't, I mean, if it was like right at the 10-second mark, he's still kind of in his windup. The umpire called violation on him. Third strike, inning over. And the Southern Miss ended up winning that game. That's not really where the bad comes in. The bad is that this is the first time it really hit me. We're going to have this in the postseason of Major League Baseball.
I think we are, yeah.
And I'm not ready for all the talking heads to go off and sound the alarm on this.
I'm with you on that. Anytime there's a new rule, there's the fear that it'll pop up in the Super Bowl or wherever, and you go, do we want the Super Bowl to be defined by this, or in this case, the World Series to be defined by pitch clock?
And I don't know what you can do. I'm loving.
No, you know what you got to do. You got to withstand it. You got to say, in a couple of years, this will be normal. And we might have to go through some bumps and bruises where we've got talking heads ripping us apart for this, but we can't go back. Yeah, we can't say the rule is not a rule anymore in only certain situations that are more important.
Can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
We made a rule. We got to live by it. And if it means that a game is decided, a game is decided. It's sad, but we're trusting that players don't put us in a position. This is something that can be avoided.
Pitch the
ball within the time limit, no matter what.
And I'm liking this pitch clock because these games are moving better. They're flowing a lot more.
Absolutely.
There was no point in having a 4-hour game.
You know what? Like same thing before. With the 24-second clock in basketball.
That's true.
It used to be four corners, and everybody was, you know, people had the ball for a long time, and then they said, "Well, what if it ends on a prayer?" Yeah. Well, the players have. This is not a judgment call. This is pitch the ball in this time. What is preventing you? Even if you throw it over the batter's head, at least you release the ball. Like, don't hold on to it. It's that simple. This is not like a robot ump where the computer failed at the last minute and we had to go to videotape. This is, you don't want a pitch clock violation? Pitch the ball. That's all we're asking you to do. Same in the NBA. You don't like the 24-second shot clock? Throw it up. Just throw it in the air. Just
And I wonder when we are going to have that. I wonder when we're going to have. Well, I mean, I guess if it's on the pitcher. Well, I mean, if the
pitcher
can throw it any time, right? If the batter's not set, the batter's not set.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe the that's the addendum they need to make to the rule moving forward.
Whoever's breaking it, right? You say you don't want it. You don't batter get in the box. Pitcher pitch the ball. If one of you fails, it's on you. It's not on us. We're not screwing you over. There's a clock. You know it. You've done 162 games of this. We're not messing around. Get in the box.
I can't see how you'd be for it, getting rid of the pitch clock now.
No.
Remember at the beginning, people were like, oh, I hate it. And it was like, why? So that mental game that, I'm using air quotes, by the way, when I say the mental game the batter was playing on the pitcher by taking 25 seconds to get back in the box between pitches.
Right.
Always stepping out and adjusting the gloves when you didn't do anything except hold a bat.
Right, yeah.
You know, it was like that was – I'm so thankful for the pitch clock because, these games are moving much swifter. It was just – you're watching this game and then you see this happen or you read the story and you see that happen. You're just like, I'm not prepared. I'm not ready. You know it's coming. I guess we got to start reminding ourselves now. We know that there's going to be some sort of – pitch clock violation that's going to happen in a very important inning because all the innings are important in postseason baseball, and we got to be ready for it.
But that's the slippery slope, right? The slippery slope is that the league would admit that some of these rules are we can just throw them out the window whenever we want, right? Like they're not important. Like we talked about this at the Super Bowl, and there's when the Eagles got called for pass interference holding on that play down with set up the Chiefs. There's a debate, and it's a legitimate debate, right? If you are a referee, do you call it or do you want the referees to know time and circumstance? Do you want to put it on the officials to know, swallow the whistle in these certain just get a feel for it.
And that's always going to happen. You're always going to have a game where we say, oh, the referee decided it.
Right. And my
umpire decided
But here's the deal. If you want to argue whether a call is a legitimate hold or not, that's a different debate. But if your argument is it was a hold or it was a pitch clock violation and the umpire decided the game, no, he didn't. No, he didn't. He called it within the rules of the game. Change the rule if you don't like it. But if you want to get to whether, in the NBA, whether it's a foul or not, I can argue. We can go over the Zapruder film and find out if a guy got hit. But if he's clearly hacked and you say, well, you shouldn't call it in the final 2 minutes. Well, how about the final three? How about the final five? How about it all? How about we just let them mug each other down the lane so we could have a flowing basketball?
Go back to the...
Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we are just unpacking news about the PGA Tour and the LIV Tour merging, which is just blowing up social media right now. We're going to get the details coming up at 45 and figure this all out.
There's too much.
There's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of golf people reacting with...
Has there been a full statement? I mean, because there's more. I think there's more questions than answers right now.
Much more questions. Like, what exactly does this mean? But it's a huge thing that's blowing up right now. So, all right, let's get to the back to the good, the bad, and the dumb as we get the.
And this dumb will probably take us on a fun journey.
Yes,
which is what we all need right now. We need to escape ourselves from what's going on in golf and just head back to the NFL, which is always fun to talk about.
Sure,
because the dumb of the day is, and I think somewhat surprisingly, I mean, they probably know, but right now, Hard Knocks is having a hard time landing a team to feature this year.
Hmm.
And I think largely because there's four teams available, but only one of them makes the most sense.
And that is?
The four teams are the Commanders, the Saints, the Bears, and the Jets.
Well, I would go to the Jets.
And a lot of the Jets are coming back going, we're not interested. Including the owners, Woody Johnson is right. One of them. Saying, he had a cryptic tweet, but it kind of leaned more towards... maybe not this year.
So how does nobody wants Hard Knocks? Like, nobody wants intrusive.
Well, I think when it first came out,
doesn't the league say, you've got to do it? Sorry, this is not up for debate.
And if I'm the league, there's only one team. I mean, I'm sorry. You know, the Bears can be interesting, right. You know, maybe. Saints and Commanders, whatever. I mean, the Commanders are going to have new ownership and that you're going to feature Hard Knocks in that. That's going to be boring.
Yeah.
You know, and no one really knows anybody who's on the Saints.
So you just tell the Jets you're doing it. Why? I mean, I think teams have a right of refusal, I guess. I don't know. They must. So I hear about teams turning this down all the time. I'm like, what do you mean turning it down? Like, doesn't the league go, we have a partnership with HBO. We're as much part of this as they are. This isn't us just allowing them to do something and we give them access. We get something out of the deal. So you're going to do it. That's it. There's nothing else to say.
And the Jets, obviously, the most entertaining option because of all the mess that they had last year. Yeah. And then there's that certain player that joined this year.
Right. Yeah. But
that's polarizing.
But we've had teams. We don't have a lot of Hard Knock teams where they're the best option. Sometimes it's like, yeah, it's just an option.
Yeah. And that very well could be it. It could be the Saints. Yeah. Could be the Commanders.
Yeah.
But it's funny that all four franchises are going, no, we don't come here. We don't want you to do this. We don't want to be a part of this.
I just think Hard Knocks has run its course. I'm okay with them keeping going, but they've been doing this for 20 years now.
Yeah,
it's the same formula every single year. It's you find some you follow these people, you get to know their lives, and then you go to the cut room and everybody's polite and nice. Nobody's yelling and screaming, and then that's it.
No one steals the playbook.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I want someone to steal the playbook.
I'd like some, like, the coach goes, hey, Jim, hey, man, I just want to let you know, man, it's not personal. And they're like, coach, thanks for everything, man. And he leaves. There's never a, what? You're cutting. I will make you pay for this. I will make you pay for this. Like, there's none of that. Get him out of here. You will rule the day. He starts throwing stuff, and they have to get security. Security has to grab him out and drag him out of the facility, and he's screaming. They never do that because they know the business. Right, they work their tails off. They couldn't make the team, but their agent's on the phone with a bunch of others. They know how it works. Nobody gets upset. Nobody loses their mind. They're disappointed, but they live to fight another day. It's the same formula every summer. So, but I wouldn't want, like, if I was a coach, man, I wouldn't want cameras all over the place filming everything. I'd be like, ugh, catching me on a hot mic making a joke.
Yeah,
like, you know. I don't.
But I will say the Lions were interesting last year.
They were interesting.
You know, that was a fun group to kind of follow. You know, to watch. And I think largely because, you know, Dan Campbell's a character bigger than the team right now.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, it's funny because that's the first player that you can think of. I mean, a player, but first person you really think of when you think of the Lions.
But I think if I was a player, I would love to have Liev Schreiber describe my life. Wouldn't that be awesome? I would love that. You know, it's like, it's not Morgan Freeman, but it's the voice of HBO Sports. Liev Schreiber.
It is.
You know, an actor has been in a million things and he's got pipes of gold, right?
What was he in X-Men?
He was
like Saber, right? Or
he
something
was like Sabretooth or something. He was like one of those guys. He was in he was just in an Anne Frank series on National Geographic where he played Otto Frank. He's like,
was he really?
Up and stuff. Yeah.
Wow. He's,
I see
versatile.
Things and I go, damn, that's Liev Schreiber. That's him. So
be weird to hear him. Was he doing a German accent?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
All right.
Wasn't he Ray Donovan on Showtime?
I think so. Yeah.
It was Ray Donovan that show?
I
saw it like first season and then we didn't get Showtime and I couldn't watch it, but. Yeah, but he's got the, you know, Johnson is trying to make the team. There's too many linebackers, so his chances are dull. But nevertheless, he relentlessly pursues his path to football glory.
He's got to love this gig, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because, I mean, they'll just hand him a script. He just goes, pops it. I mean, it always amazes me. I never thought about it when I was younger, but it always amazes me now when I look back on it going, like, these guys probably love doing voiceover work. I'm sure they love the exotic locations and getting in front of a camera and you know, really trying to hone their craft.
Yeah.
But there's got to be something for them to go, man, this is like a 9-to-5 job, Monday through Friday. I just pop into a studio. I mean, I know it's not 9-to-5. They're probably going for like two, 3 hours.
Here's your script, man.
And here's your script. Read these lines. And something like this is his own voice. He's not even having to, you know, embellish on anything.
It's so funny because I just bought EA Sports' PGA Tour golf game. I love golf video games, and this one's really good. Yeah, I know. This one's really good, and it's got Rich Lerner, who's on the Golf Channel. Okay. He does kind of the play-by-play, and Frank Nobolo is like the color commentator, Nota Begay, like these guys. And I can't help it. It just drives me crazy because I will play a hole, and I'll hit it in the bunker. And then I'll hit it out of the bunker. And then the next hole, I'll hit it in the bunker again. And Frank Lerner, his voice comes on. He says, Frank, that's back-to-back bunkers for our player. And I'm thinking, that guy, somebody had to write that down and say, we'd like you to say that when a player is in back-to-back bunker. Like every scenario that I'm playing where they're describing what I'm doing, all I keep thinking about is that guy in a soundproof studio reading pages and pages and pages of lines that they're going to code to use in various circumstances. And I'm like, that must take forever. It's like Madden. It's not enough to say, you know, Travis Kelce with the catch for a first down. You got to say it for every player that's in the league. And it must take forever to do that. But every time I'm playing, I keep thinking that's not just a standard line. Like, you know, in the old video games, it would be like, that's a good drive.
Hey Tony,
I'm going to interrupt you real quick. Yes.
I'm just going to play this. You know, we got a few minutes left in this break, but Jay Monahan is speaking right now.
Okay.
You've ever been before.
What is it with the Saudis and sports? What do you see in terms of it? You clearly value this idea of these global franchises. You know, I mean, I've talked about, you know, WWE or F1, just in terms of the interest there. Not to mention, of course, what we call soccer, the rest of the world calls football.
Because it's, you know, a ball and a foot.
I guess.
That's why football.
You're right. We're wrong. But anyhow. But what about the value? What is it that you see as an investor, one of the largest funds available in the world to you, that is so compelling?
What's going on right now is in Saudi is unprecedented anywhere else in the world.
We started with something Jay called Monahan.
I was going to say, that's not Jay Monahan. Yeah. What exactly is this?
This vision was announced back in 2017.
I think this guy represents DP World Tour.
Okay. So he was...
I'm trying to figure out because, I mean, I'm sorry, it's just breaking news. Oh, he's, it's Al Ramayan.
Guess is as good as mine.
I guess he's the head of Live Tour. He's the chairman of Live Tour.
Okay.
And
so he's
because
being
the Saudi PIF governor, which I'm not sure what that is.
Okay.
I'm not sure what PIF governor is.
Right.
It probably sounds
but
something
wasn't
important.
Jay Monahan,
that wasn't Jay Monahan, commission. But they're sitting next to each other because apparently, because they're live on the Golf Channel right now. Because since the merger means that the lawsuit is over, it ended minutes.
And that's true. But now I want to know, like, is Phil Mickelson going to play at the Colonial now? And will Rory McIlroy play at the Live Golf Tournament in Australia?
Will the PGA Tour be 54 holes?
Yeah. And can they wear shorts? All right. We're going to dissect this getting more and more news on the Live Tour and the PGA Tour and the European Tour coming together.
Brian Musburger.
Wake up call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, so again, breaking news that's coming down. Live Golf and the PGA Tour, along with the DP World Tour, that's the European Tour, have come together and announced a merger. This ends a lawsuit that Live Golf had against the PGA Tour, but it also has some questions that we're not 100% sure of. So it looks like there is that the PGA Tour, which was a nonprofit entity, is now going to be a for-profit entity. And we haven't really gotten any other details other than they're coming together. Will the LIV golfers be able to play on the PGA Tour? I would assume so. If you're going to merge, I would assume so.
And I would assume that PGA players can play on the LIV Tour.
Well, only if they can be brought into the team play format.
Oh, man, is that going – are you keeping that or is that going away?
Are they keeping that or going away? I don't know.
Is the PGA going to have their own team? Like, will Rory team up with Jordan Spieth and, you know, who else is Jason Day?
Okay, so if you're –
Can we make a super team?
Let's do this. All right, let's say – let's go in our own business, but a lot of you can relate to this in other businesses, okay? Let's say you and I are working for a corporate radio station, a big corporate radio station. They own a million stations, right? And then we say, you know, this show, this station, we don't like the way it's being run, whatever. We're going to go and go to this independent company. We're going to form our own independent company. We're going to be able to do some things that we want to do, right? And we're doing it. And again, you can put this in all of your industries, from the big conglomerates, if you wanted to do something different and break away. Because that's basically what these guys did. They didn't like the way the PGA Tour was being run, so they broke away and they were doing something new, right? So they were doing 54-hole tournaments. They were doing no cuts, guaranteed money. They were doing team golf, where there's even more money if your team wins, right? So they're doing all of that. Now imagine you and I we're renegades, we're doing our own thing, but then our independent company, a big conglomerate comes in and goes, we'd like to merge with you, and we merge with you, and then they come in and do all of the things that we fought against. And they just implement all of the things that we fought against. Then we didn't win, right? Phil Mickelson and these guys were trying to get the PGA Tour to change. How did the PGA Tour change? If it changed the way they wanted it to change, then I could see them going, well, we don't need the 54-hole thing. We don't need the team golf thing. We weren't going after him for that. Phil Mickelson did not join LIV so he could play 54 holes. He joined LIV because he wanted to do something that was against the model of business that the PGA Tour had. So now if the merger just means that the LIV golfers are back on the PGA Tour, that's not going to work. So what you want to know is, what did the PGA Tour do, and what does the LIV golfers want from the PGA Tour to want this merger to work? So I would think that some of the things that they like about LIV are going to be implemented in LIV events. Again, I don't know if team golf is something that everyone's like, rah, this is awesome. It may be more of a marketing thing, because you remember when Greg Norman was talking about the team golf, he was hoping people would buy it.
Is Greg Norman Thanos today?
Right, yeah, it's a good question.
Just sitting back and looking on a grateful planet.
On his farm, yeah.
That he changed golf.
So he wanted those teams to be bought by people. He wanted somebody to own the high flyers. That was the kind of the business model. So let's say I'm a tech billionaire, and I own the high flyers, and those four guys, they're on my team. I own the team. So I pay for the travel, I pay for all that stuff like a team owner would, and I'm part of the LIV Golf. I have a franchise in the LIV Golf. Now, is that going to be around? Probably not, because, you know, the LIV Golf, the PGA Tour is like, no, we're not going to have people buying groups of golfers, teams of golfers. But I now think about all of this. Think about what all of this means. We always said it's not about Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka. Those guys have some currency in the bank on their major victories to get invited to other majors. I mean, Dustin Johnson is a Masters champion from a couple of years ago. Brooks Koepka just won the PGA. Phil Mickelson just won the PGA a couple of years ago. Phil Mickelson's a Masters champion. He's a British Open champion. These guys are going to get invited to these tournaments because of their qualification as past champions. But it wasn't about them. It was like Harold Varner III. How does he continue to go to the Masters? He hasn't won the Masters. He can't get points to qualify. He can't play in PGA Tour events so that he can qualify for the tournament. So how does he get there? He probably doesn't. How does he get to the U.S. Open? How does he get to the PGA? Like, eventually you run out of qualifications. You aren't participating in the qualifications because the world rankings don't count you. You're not playing in events that give you an automatic berth. So how do you do it? The best way to do it is when you get to the PGA, finish in the top 15. if you're in the Masters, finish in the top, what is it, 10 and whatever, 20 in ties, that's the only way to do it if you're already getting in there. But now I got to think all of this is back for these guys. Their world rankings are coming back. All of it. All of it's coming back. I got to think. Because if I'm Liv, that's the only way I would do this. If I'm Liv, I'm like, if you're not, if we're merging, but these players now are world ranked players. You're going to honor our events because now you're part of it too. So I'm really curious about where this is going. And I also think this. I think the PGA Tour lawyers told them, and I don't know, I'm not a law guy, but I got to think that they told them, you ain't winning this case. This lawsuit's real and it's got some merit to it. You're not winning.
Yeah.
And so you better figure out a plan B, because plan A, going to court, you're not going to win.
I think it, first of all, perfect timing. Drop this news now. I mean, I think it's excellent timing. Well,
it's not. It dropped because they had an agreement.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, yeah. The reason why I'm saying perfect timing, I'm thinking it's because of what just happened at the PGA Championship
with Brooks Koepka.
With Brooks Koepka winning. And just, I don't know. I just, that there's that, just that feeling of like, okay, you know what? That they're here, you know, they're competitive.
I'm going to disagree with you on a little bit. I don't think the PGA Tour.
You don't think that had an influence?
I don't know, because I think the PGA Tour was saying there was a higher principle than a Liv golfer winning a major. Like, this is a complete breakdown of their structure. They didn't completely dismantle their structure because Brooks Koepka won a major. They can go, fine. And guess what? Our guy just won a major at the Masters. Like, the guy that's speaking loudly for us, John Rahm, he just won the Masters. So take that, Liv. I think this was about the lawsuit. I really do. I think this was about the lawsuit. I think that there was monopolistic practices that I think their lawyers told them, you're going to lose. And when you lose, you're going to lose big. These guys, they have a case. And I think it has something to do with that. I think they could survive. I think that if Liv golfers kept winning over and over again, but I don't think their business model was hurting because they didn't have Brooks Koepka. I think it was, they've got major champions and we've got major champions. But I also think that the way they did their business, they were hoarding money. I mean, they were hoarding money. They're a nonprofit that Phil Mickelson kept saying over and over again, there's a lot more money in this, and you guys didn't share it, and you guys didn't share it properly. Like, there's all sorts of things that he was screaming about from the top of the golf world that nobody was listening to. Like, I couldn't have cared less that Phil Mickelson couldn't get his rights. You know what I mean? It's like, so what? You think Patrick Mahomes gets his rights? They're the property of the NFL. Like, Patrick Mahomes doesn't own his plays. Like, he doesn't. He has given that away as part of the larger entity that's the NFL. The NFL wants to put a Patrick Mahomes highlight in an ad that of an official NFL product. They can do that. Phil Mickelson was like, you can't, because I'm an independent contractor. And the PGA Tour was like, yeah, you kind of are, but you kind of aren't. And he's like, no, I'm different than Patrick Mahomes. Like, Patrick Mahomes has a contract that he signed with the Chiefs that allows the Chiefs and the league to do that to him. I'm an independent contractor. And you're taking my highlights and promoting things with them that I don't want. There's little things like that, but I thought those were small. I thought those were petty. Like, they didn't seem to matter. But like I said, I don't think these guys were leaving Liv for anything else other than a sizable paycheck, a reduced schedule, golf kind of on their terms, and the PGA Tour all of a sudden went, all right. Victor Hovland made $3.6 million last weekend, yeah, winning the Memorial. When was the last time a golfer won $3.6 million 5 years ago? Two years ago. They finally went, you get all of this money. But I want to know what Rory thinks of this now, because if there's one guy that is hating on Liv or since some the of the second it came around.
Even some of the older guys.
Yeah.
You know, who've all hated Liv from the get-go.
They took their arrows, put them on fire, fired them at Liv, and now they're like, yeah, I guess we're all buddies now. Weird. It's weird.